The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Cavanagh with you until 12 noon today. We have commentary on the stories of the day. We also, of course, invite your views, your perceptions and your take on the stories of the day. You can text us on 086 60 25000. You can use that number for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000, 003 53 74 91 25000. If you're calling from outside of the dialing area, you can also, of course, email us comments@highlandradio.com. We're available on social media. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. We're on other social media channels as well. You can, of course, access us via our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and our Facebook pages, Highland Radio and Highland Radio News and Sport. And the great thing about the Facebook pages and the YouTube channel is you can watch the show unfold as well. We have Zoom calls, which will feature, of course, the conversations on screen, and you can interact with the show live in that way as well. So lots of ways to interact with the 9 till noon show, both traditionally and electronically on your new media. Now, before we do anything else, we will take a look at the morning papers, and starting with the Irish Independent this morning. Now, there is a what I think is a bit of an unfair headline here, actually. The headline on the Irish Independent is "New Tax on Land Hoarders Shelved Ahead of Budget." Now, this is the residential zoned land tax. Now, the idea of the RZLT is that if people are hoarding land that could be used for development in the hopes of getting higher prices, then that should be taxed, which is fair enough. The problem, and this became a huge problem in Donegal over the past 18 months to 2 years, the problem was that there was some land in Donegal and in other rural areas which was zoned opportunity. Now, that basically meant it could be used at some future point for residential or commercial development. That land came under the scope of the RZLT, even if that land was being farmed, if that land was in home ownership or family ownership, and they were running a farm and they were farming away and they had no intention of selling, they had no intention of doing anything else but what they'd always done on the land, they would find themselves subject to the tax. And it was a tax that was designed to penalise those who were hoarding land in the hope of making future profit. And it was felt that was very, very unfair in the way it was treating some farmers. Some were hoping to make a quick buck, others were not, but all were being tarred with the same brush, as it were. But it now seems that it will not go ahead in the budget, with Minister Jack Chambers having a rethink along with his officials to see how they will handle this situation. Also inside of the Independent, of course, as is the case in all the papers today, lots about Mike Lynch, the UK tech pioneer with Irish links, parents from Cork and Tipperary, who is missing after his yacht sank off Sicily. A number of people have escaped from the yacht, but there are six people missing at the moment. And that huge rescue operation is continuing in the waters off Sicily. A wonderful picture inside the Independent. It's on page 6. Blue supermoon turned red by summer of raging wildfires. A picture of a supermoon rising above the Temple of Poseidon on Cape Sunion near Athens in Greece last night. It's a staggering picture. Really, really good indeed. And you can see that inside your Independent. Irish Times this morning, a concerning front page story on the Irish Times. The front page story reads, "Mother and baby home redress talks stall. Government negotiator Sheila Noonan is unable to secure money from churches. Deadline missed as talks fail to secure agreement on church contributions." And this is an ongoing situation. Minister Rodrigo Gorman had hired Sheila Noonan, the former trade unionist, with instructions to recommend a best and final offer from Catholic and Church of Ireland bodies within 6 months. The deadline hadn't been disclosed when she took on the role, the paper says, of expert negotiator. And, you know, one would have thought at this stage that this would have been put to bed, but obviously not. And a lot of concern now as to where those discussions are going. Inside the Irish Times this morning, a story which you have to really dig deep into the Irish Independent and some other papers to get, but Beattie steps down as UUP leader due to irreconcilable differences. Last straw for Doug Beattie was rejection of his bid to have Robin Swan replaced in the Assembly with his choice, who was a progressive MLA, and instead the party chose a less progressive basically Doug Beattie wanted Daryl Wilson, who's a young liberal unionist but an experienced councillor. However, the party executive chose Colin Crawford, a less experienced councillor but more traditional in his views, and Doug Beattie basically saying there are irreconcilable differences between himself and other senior party members, and that is going to be the reason for his stepping down. Speculation is that he'll be replaced by MLA Robbie Butler. One quote in an article here says, what's Robbie Butler going to do? The same people that disliked Doug Beattie are probably going to dislike Robbie even more. And when you look at where the UUP were at the start of the peace process with David Trimble, who became the first minister in the initial Stormont Assembly after the talks, I mean, the UUP have lost so much support to the DUP over the years that, you know, if that were a former UUP leader, someone like David Trimble or another of the earlier UUP leaders stepping down, it would have been front page news. Now Doug Beattie barely merits a mention in some of the papers, and it's a real sign of the times. Irish Daily Mail this morning, a year-old baby girl savaged by XL bully dog, and this story covered in all the papers. Infant needed surgery after attack in her own home. Baby girl rushed to hospital for surgery after she was attacked by an XL bully in her home in the Lixnaw area of North County Kerry. And you'll have heard that story on the news with Michaela as well. Also inside the Daily Mail this morning, a lot on the story about the yacht going down off Sicily. And again, another picture of that supermoon. This time there's a picture of it above the Suleymaniye Mosque in Istanbul. And that's, if anything, it's even a more staggering picture. Looks really, really good indeed. And that's a picture of that supermoon. And that is on the Irish Daily Mail. The Irish Sun this morning, I saved my baby as a yacht sank in dark, mum's 4 a.m. storm rescue. And another story there from the sinking of that yacht off Sicily. And inside the Irish Sun, and Lee was playing Old Town by Phil Lynott before we came on air. Lynott would have been 75 years of age today. Today would have been his 75th birthday. And now Phil's son, MacDara Lamb, who bears an uncanny resemblance to his dad, said he believes that Phil Lynott secretly fathers three other children in Ireland. And there are three other children of Phil Lynott who are not out in the open at the moment. And that story is inside the Irish Sun. And I suppose you can speculate like that, and we don't know. But there is a Phil Lynott convention taking place in the Grand Social in Dublin this week. And a bit of the conversation is that what would Phil have been doing if he had made it to his 75th year? And a number of people speculating as to what Phil would have been doing. I think Jim Fitzpatrick, who would have been a close friend of Lynott, probably has it closest to the mark. He said Phil would have been working with young bands, producing them, recording them. That was his ambition in retirement, and there is no doubt about it that Phil Lynott always was supportive of young and upcoming Irish talent, not least of which a young band of whippersnappers who I once saw support Thin Lizzy actually at the very first Lancaster gig in 1981. That young band was, what was it they were called? Oh yeah, U2 they were called, yeah. Lynott would have been a very big supporter of U2 and other bands back in the day. Inside the Irish Daily Mirror as well, an awful lot of the coverage is with regards to the sinking of that yacht. Story inside, all the spinning round left the Wolftones too tired to stay at EP for Kylie. The Wolftones were so exhausted after their electric picnic set for 75,000 revelers that they went straight home rather than stay to watch Kylie Minogue, who came on the stage after them. Band members Brian Warfield, 78, Tommy Byrne, 80, and Noel Nagle, 80, gave a phenomenal performance on Sunday after driving for over 4 hours to get there. The world's most famous Republican band had driven 330 kilometres from Letterkenny in County Donegal after heading headlining a festival there on Saturday. They drove straight from Letterkenny, we're told, to Stradbally. And they did that journey in 4 hours. So that's what we're being told by the Irish Sun this morning. Finally, the Irish Daily Star. The IRA killed my son. That song is so hurtful. The mother of IRA murder victim Paul Quinn has called on the Wolftones and the band's fans to stop singing Ooh Ah Up the Rah. Bridge Quinn has described the chorus of the hit song Celtic Symphony as hurtful. It comes as tens of thousands were filmed singing along at the Electric Picnic. And also a lot of coverage inside on the death of Matthew Perry. Perry spent €50,000 in 29 days on ketamine. The friend's star and helper had bought vials and injections, we're told. And a number of arrests we know over the course of the past while in connection with the death of Matthew Perry. A number of friends and others accused of providing him with the drug that's believed to have been responsible for his sad and premature death. Well, that's the way things are looking in the newspapers this morning. Again, if you want to make touch with the programme, you can do so. As we said, you can text us 086 60 25,000. Use that number of WhatsApp messages as well. There's a lot to happen on the show today, but as we always say, it's your views, it's your contributions are at the absolute heart of what this show is about. And we're joined on Zoom this morning by Liam Maloney, who is a solicitor, and Liam is going to speak to us about big tobacco and the fact that the state is paying billions of euro a year to treat illnesses which are caused by tobacco. Liam believes that there needs to be a look at that. Liam, you're welcome to the programme this morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Liam, the massive healthcare cost to the state is not, you believe, in any way met by the increased excise duty on cigarettes, by the tax that's imposed on them. A lot of smokers say, hang on, I pay my taxes, I paid huge excise on the cigarettes that I buy, and that means I am making a contribution. You believe that goes nowhere near covering the cost?
No, not at all, because unfortunately in Ireland over 4,500 people die each year from smoking. The figures show that 1 in 5 people with respiratory diseases admitted to Irish hospitals are being treated because of smoking. And medical evidence is undisputed that exposure to tobacco smoke causes death, disease and disability, and it's a massive drain on our health service. There was a study done a number of years ago which confirmed that in terms of the figures, 116,000 outpatient appointments annually, 31,000 hospital admissions, 38,000 emergency department attendances, and over 20,000 hospital day case appointments linked to smoking. Now, the figures are really staggering, because annually the government and the taxpayer has to foot a bill of over 400 million to treat smoking related illnesses. Now, this has been examined in the United States, where they have taken action, and in the late 1990s, after a number of US attorney generals sued tobacco to cover healthcare costs, a master settlement was agreed upon, whereby 4 of the largest tobacco companies and subsequently 41 tobacco companies reached a settlement with all of the states in the United States, where they agreed to pay $10 billion each year towards covering these healthcare costs. Now, in Ireland, obviously the scale is much, much smaller, but we still are incurring huge costs in treating people. And obviously there's also ongoing other costs related to smoking illnesses. Cigarettes are dangerous, they're a defective and an unsafe product, and action should be taken by the government to recover, in some instances, these costs. Now, also, by way of example, Donal, other countries have followed suit. And Brazil, Guatemala, Canada, Venezuela, Bolivia and Nicaragua and Australia have all taken cases to recover healthcare costs. And it's also open to health insurers to do likewise. So that's something that they're probably looking at, the likes of, you know, Irish Life, VHI, who are paying for their members to be treated for smoking-related illnesses, that they also may seek reimbursement. Now, I am aware of a number of individual cases also in the United States for people who have sued Big Tobacco and received significant sums in compensation for contracting smoking-related illnesses. But there hasn't been such cases here in Ireland.
Would this be done in the domestic court service? Would this be done in the context of the European court service? And as an adjunct to that question, if it were to be done under the course of the European court system, would it be a matter for perhaps the EU as a whole to take an action on behalf of all the member states?
Well, that's a very good question, but it probably will come down to each individual state deciding on what their policy is in terms of seeking reimbursement for the annual payments that they're making to treat illnesses that were caused by addiction to tobacco, because obviously nicotine is addictive. But the question you've raised is very good, because the EU came together in relation to providing vaccines, and that worked really, really well. But that was a separate matter, because they provided indemnities to the vaccine manufacturers. But in terms of a European-wide approach, I believe it's probably an individual domestic government approach. But I am sure the Irish government have looked at this. But I'm not aware that they have taken steps to commence proceedings, but I have no doubt that they have looked at this.
Would it be the Attorney General effectively that would take that action then on behalf of the state?
Yeah, it would be the Attorney General that would issue those proceedings on behalf of the state. And obviously the HSE would have an involvement there as well, because they are in effect paying for the treatment costs. But there's also issues, of course, and this is just as an aside, in terms of the exposure to tobacco smoke and how dangerous it can be, because obviously secondhand exposure to smoking, or, you know, that is also a concern. Now, I've no doubt, and thankfully the smoking ban was brilliant, and it protects people, particularly in the workforce. But there are also other issues like flight attendants. And particularly in America, there was a settlement reached for non-smoking flight attendants. Because if you look at it, over the years, on average, a flight attendant who had a 30-year career might have been exposed for 40,000 hours during their career to the effects of smoking. And it is a direct cause of cancer. I think over 12 cancers have been identified as having a relationship with smoking. And unfortunately, in Ireland, lung cancers are the most common cause of smoke-related deaths in Ireland. So it's a massive problem. And going back to the first thing you said, obviously the government collects a lot of money in terms of tax, but that's reclining because, or reducing, because thankfully the number of people who are smoking is significantly reducing as well.
It begs the question, I mean, why is this still a legal practice in so far as this is causing harm to individuals, it's causing harm to the state, it's of a severe monetary cost to the state? Is it time for the state to grab the bull by the horns and actually start looking at the legality of tobacco and the potential of outlawing it completely?
I think that's something they have looked at already, but I think that would run into significant difficulties in terms of competition and the availability of products. But I think for the moment we have to deal with the position as it is, which is, you know, tobacco is legal to sell. Obviously, there are safeguards in terms of vaping and in terms of the age you can be to buy tobacco. Thankfully, the ban is in there in terms of being exposed to smoke in bars and in hospitality and other areas in Irish life. But there is a significant issue in terms of healthcare costs, and they are increasing. So the budget in Ireland, just by way of, I suppose, to set the scene, is 22 billion, the health budget, and probably over a billion is being spent to treat people who are affected by smoking and smoke-related illnesses. So there are massive sums of money that are being covered by the Irish taxpayer.
And there is an argument that says we can attribute a certain amount of illness to smoking directly or either indirectly, but we don't know to what extent people who may have illnesses that aren't smoking related may have had those illnesses exacerbated or brought on earlier by the fact that their bodies were weakened by years of smoking, even though they may have given up some years beforehand.
Yeah, and to be fair, the state has taken action in terms of a number of studies, and the Office of Tobacco Control have looked at that as well, and they're very alive to that. But ultimately, the figures show that this is a massive problem in Ireland, and the extent of the outpatient appointments, hospital admissions, and with a health service that's already under serious pressure, ultimately somebody has to pay for this. So me and you and every other taxpayer is footing the bill for the tobacco companies. And ultimately that should be looked at.
The first cross-party committee recommendation that came on this issue was way back in 1999. The author of that particular report was Alan Shatter, himself a highly respected legal figure and a former justice minister. It would appear that even though this was looked at and recommended 25 years ago, nothing's happened in the interim. Or are there still discussions and investigations taking place behind the scenes, to your knowledge?
And I wouldn't have that information, but I'm aware of that cross-party report at that time, and that Alan Shatter was one of the first people to recommend that action should be taken. But in the intervening years, no litigation has taken place. There was preliminary litigation here back in the late 1990s, similar to America, but the litigation did not progress. And that was on behalf of people, unfortunately, who contracted smoking-related illnesses. And they were going to be part of a class action at that time, but it did not proceed.
Liam Maloney, it's a fascinating subject and certainly one that we'll be keeping an eye on with interest. As we said, this was first discussed over 24 years ago. Perhaps there'll be movement on it now, and we'll be keeping it close eye. But in the meantime, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us today.
Good morning. Thank you, Donald.
Thank you, Liam. It's been our pleasure speaking to you this morning. So that's the question then. Do you believe that the state should actually start taking tobacco companies to court and try to recoup some of the costs that they're paying as a result of the smoking issue? Another caller says a bigger issue than smoking today is vaping. It's everywhere and no one knows the long-term result of using them. That is a fair, and I know there's a lot of studies starting to take place now into vaping, but it may well be several years before we know if it is a major issue. Caller says, raise smoking and the government. If smokers die younger, doesn't the state save a lot of money from not having to spend money on pensions for those people? I suspect if that's the case, I am not sure that the amount of money saved on pensions would in any way meet the cost of providing healthcare. It's an interesting perspective, but I am not sure that would be one that works. I just remind you, by the way, that the Rose of Tralee is on this week, over the yesterday and today, and our Donegal Rose, Niamh Shevlin, will be interviewed live on stage with Dáithí O'Shea from the Dome in Tralee this evening. You can tune in from 8 o'clock on national television, and we wish Niamh, of course, all the best. Now, let's have a few of your comments before we go for a break. Caller says, good morning, Donald. I got a letter yesterday from ESB Networks to say they'd be calling to replace my meter with a smart meter. It's inside my house, so they need to come into my house. They say it'll not increase my electricity costs, but that's not what friends and relatives tell me. I'm reluctant to change and just wonder if people's experiences with the new meters have got any better and are they still seeing an increase in their bills or not? And we've heard various perspectives on the impact of these new smart meters from the ESB. So if you've any perspective on that you can offer to Bridget, please do get in touch. You can call us 074-91-25000 or you can text us 086-6025000. Use that number for WhatsApp messages as well. I just want to remind you, by the way, that the annual Donegal Camino is taking place again this year. It's raising funds for Cancer Care West Donegal in Letterkenny. And Greg will be participating in day two of the Ards Forest Park Walk. It's taking place on Monday, the 2nd of September. And you're asked to please give what you can and support this great service in Donegal. And it's the link you can donate on is idonate.ie/fundraiser/Greg Hughes. So if you go into idonate.ie and search Greg Hughes, you'll be able to donate to Greg as part of that initiative. Now, if you can't go online, you can call the station on 91 25000, 074 91 25000, and one of the team here will be more than happy to help you with that. Also, just to let you know, speaking about Greg, that the 9 till noon show is coming, a special weekend 9 till noon show is coming from the London Irish Charity Vintage Club in Greenford from 12 noon until 2 p.m. on Sunday, the 8th of September. Now, this is the third, is it third or fourth year this has been done, Carla? At least 3 years, anyway, that Greg's done that particular show in London. And there's always a huge Donegal turnout at that event, and a lot of people here let their relatives know that it's the case. So there is a big Donegal turnout from that particular show. And you can tune in, as we say, 12 noon until 2 p.m. So it's the noon to 2 show on Sunday, the 8th of September. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donald Kavanagh with you on till 12 noon today. Now, there's been some very interesting research published in The Lancet, and it's recommending a change in how health services view treatment of obesity. And we're joined by a dietitian and a spokesperson for IRSPEN, and that's Dr. Word Al-Najim. Dr. Al-Najim, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
A pleasure talking to you. First of all, I have to ask you, what is IRSPEN, if you don't mind?
That's all right. It's the Irish Society for Clinical Nutrition and Metabolism.
Yes, so this research that's in The Lancet, I mean, we all know that, and I have to say mea culpa on this one, a lot of us feel we're overweight, we're obese, some of us morbidly so, but part of the problem here is that people with obesity are treated as people that need to lose weight. This is arguing, and you, I presume, support this argument, that there needs to be a more widespread view of the whole health of the person, not just to focus on the body shape and the weight.
Yes, absolutely. So we now recognize that obesity just cannot be fully cured, but it can be managed effectively with ongoing treatment. So what often happens is that people start a weight loss treatment, reach their weight loss goal, and then stop. But when treatments stop, obesity tends to come back, and the benefits are lost. So what we want to do now is that the focus should not just be on weight loss, but basically on helping people gain health, whether or not the weight loss happens. We want people to live longer and live better by keeping the disease under control and focusing on overall health benefits.
One of the things we're told is that you can't take a one-size-fits-all approach, and not every treatment and not every approach to dieting is going to work for every individual, that all our metabolisms are different, our bodies are different. Is there a way that we can sort of find out more about our bodies and about our metabolisms and perhaps find out how to find a way forward that specifically helps us?
Yeah, I mean, look, we all, I think we should all be eating healthy and trying to exercise. We will all gain health benefits from that. But what should really happen is that with one-to-one or individualized personal assessment and treatment, we can target the foundational issues that people might be having that can be leading to their weight gain. And once that is addressed, then people can lose weight, but also, more importantly, gain health. So it's more about individualized treatment moving forward.
There are a lot of rules that we're all told. Don't eat after 7 o'clock at night. Don't eat too many carbs. There was a great one that used to always say, breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and evening meal like a pauper. Is that something you would recommend? That, I mean, you know, I know I have issues, and one of my big problems, and I say problem, but it's just not a problem, it's just a thing I continually do, is I eat at night. And I like nothing more than sitting down in front of the TV after a hard day with a cup of tea and a couple of nice biscuits and maybe a sandwich if I'm feeling peckish. And I know in my heart and soul that that's probably the worst thing I should be doing. I presume I shouldn't really, should I?
Right. Now, this is called basically an obesogenic environment. So we are all exposed to all these yummy food. There's very aggressive marketing strategies. We all are eating larger portion sizes than we should. We're all becoming a little bit more sedentary, maybe even by working from home. We're moving less. So all of these are basically drivers for weight gain or obesity. And this is what we commonly refer to obesogenic environment. However, not everyone exposed to these environmental factors will develop, will gain weight or develop even obesity, because there is very much genetic differences that influence how people will respond to these factors and whether maintaining their weight or even gaining weight. So I think while we should all take a bit of responsibility and maybe not on daily basis having that nice cup of tea and biscuits, you can have your tea, but maybe not have biscuits every day. You can always replace these with healthier snacks. Now, this is our role. Now, I'm a dietitian, so my role is helping people identify maybe better snacks, healthier eating habits. But we should also, of course, enjoy life and not be fully strict with the consumption of these foods.
Are there marketing tricks that are carried out by some companies to make us think things are healthy when they're not? I have a very good friend who runs a gym, and one of the things that he is constantly pointing out is that you will see products that are sort of have things like breakfast biscuits or nutrition biscuits or you know, granola and whatever, and they'll be given names and they'll be given packaging that makes them seem a lot healthy. But he's actually done a breakdown comparing them with digestives or hobnobs or whatever, and it turns out they're pretty much exactly the same.
Yes, absolutely. No, this is common. I mean, there's very light regulations on what companies can put on their products, so they can name them whatever they want. This is where nutrition knowledge and education is important. Again, my role as a dietitian working with individuals is to help people understand what the labels mean and look at the breakdown of the food labels, look at the breakdown of the ingredients, at the nutrition factors, at the nutrition facts on the labels, which all of these should be important in determining, you know, which product is healthy indeed or not. And having said that, there are some genuinely healthy products out there, and we shouldn't just generalize the statement.
Have we become obsessed with the word fat? And if we see fat free on something, we immediately assume that's great. Because I remember seeing a bag of sweets once, and there was a huge label on the bag of sweets that said fat free. Now, as far as I could see, the sweets were basically big, huge balls of sugar held together with E-numbers and glycerin. That's as far as I could see. It was E-numbers, flavouring, glycerin and sugar is all that was in those sweets. But there was still a big, huge label that said fat free. I mean, and some of us still fall for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, this comes to the aggressive marketing. I mean, every company wants to sell their product, so they'll do whatever they can to sell their product. It comes back to the personal nutrition knowledge and common sense sometimes in choosing these products, and basically the person's goals and health and weight. You know, not everyone has to restrict completely their sugar intake or their fat intake if they don't need to. Other people need more responsibility than the others. So it really depends on the individual person.
And important that we keep an eye on the labels and the labeling on the products we're consuming, because, I mean, I heard it suggested that there was two brands of yogurt. One was fat-free and the other wasn't fat-free, but someone pointed out that there was a level of fat in the yogurt that wasn't fat-free, but the amount of sugar in that yogurt was actually substantially lower than the amount of sugar that was in the fat-free one. And sometimes, maybe, as we said earlier, you know, sometimes we demonize fat to an extent where we completely forget that we do need some fat in our bodies, and we do need to consume some fat over the course of a balanced diet, and that fat can be important to us in a way that sugar isn't. And maybe what we need to do is focus more on sugar than focus on fat.
Yeah, I think we need to have a balanced view on all the nutrients in the product, protein, fat and carbs. So not prioritize one over the other. Of course, again, companies need to make their products tasty. So if they are going to remove fat, they will need to add sugar, because otherwise the product is not going to be edible. And vice versa, if they are going to remove sugar, they need to make it creamier, so they're going to add fat to it. Looking at the label, understanding, again, what's the purpose of consuming that product. Now, if you want to have a yogurt, you were mentioning yogurt as an example, but if someone is having yogurt as a dessert, for example, after a meal, they might want to choose something that is maybe more creamier or something with higher sugar if that's what they want. But if they are consuming it because they think it's a healthy snack, then they need to really understand the food label and the nutrition breakdown of that product so that they can make a wiser decision. Maybe they need to increase their protein intake. In that case, they need to look at the protein in the food label. If they purely want to restrict fat intake, but they don't care so much about sugar, maybe because they are athletics or they are going for a long run, they can get the sugar. Then that's okay as well. So people really need to understand why they are consuming certain products and not just assuming just because it says healthy, it's healthy. And we come back again to the main point of the research that was published recently, is when people are trying to lose weight, it's not just about restricting the calories, because everyone who restricts their calories might lose weight, but they might not gain health in the process. So now this research is focusing on the treatment should be about helping people to gain health, so understanding their nutrition and the products that they are consuming in order to gain health while they are consuming it.
You're advocating a lifelong approach to this. And as you said, it's not just enough to lose weight, because many of us have at various times set ourselves a target. I am going to lose 5 kilos. I am going to lose 10 kilos. I am going to lose whatever. We lose the 5 kilos. We lose the 10 kilos. We feel absolutely fantastic. And within 6 months, it's all back on again with a little bit of interest just to keep us company. We need to go beyond just dieting for a limited amount of time and then saying, oh, that's grand, I've lost the weight, now I can go back to normal. The reality is we need to change our approach, change the way we eat, and more importantly, perhaps, change other things we do over the course of our entire life. Get out more, walk more, get more exercise, and we can't just look at weight on its own. We have to look at it in the wider context of the way we live.
Absolutely. I mean, when people intentionally try to lose weight by eating less, it triggers a series of changes in the body. For example, they can lose a hormone called leptin, which normally helps control hunger. And there's also a drop in the amount of energy the body burns. This happens not just because the body is lighter, but because it becomes more efficient at using energy. So as a result, when people lose weight, they will feel hungrier, they will think about food more often, they will feel less satisfied after eating. And what's challenging is even when the weight loss has stopped and stabilized, so people have reached their goals and maintained their weight loss for a while, these physiological changes stick around, which make it harder for people to keep the weight off in the long run, and that's why weight regain happens.
In terms of our bodies, are there different body shapes? Are there different... I mean, I went to college with a guy who, as far as I could see, lived on chips and cornflakes. And he was the thinnest guy in the class. I know other people who all they have to do is walk past a cake shop and they put on a kilo. I mean, our body shapes are different. Some people develop a spare tire right around. I don't. I tend to develop a belly. So I tend, if I put on weight, it just all goes on the belly and I just tend to look almost pregnant. Other people will develop the spare tire right around. I mean, we all have different bodies. We all have different physiologies. Yeah. Do we need to understand our bodies more? Do we need to understand more about what we are and get in touch? And more importantly, how do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, we all have genetic differences, right? So it influences not just how much we gain in terms of weight, but also where that fat or weight gain is going to be centered in the body. So it is important to understand your body. It's important to understand which lifestyle methods will work for you. Now, you mentioned your friend, for example, in college, who can eat whatever they want and not gain weight. Now, they might not gain weight, but not necessarily they are healthy. So weight does not determine health. You can be lean but unhealthy, and you can be overweight but healthy. So understanding your body, understanding, you know, even your blood results, if you go for annual checks, understanding the importance of nutrition and what it does to your body, I think these are all important for someone to be tuned in with.
We've been speaking to Dr. Word Al-Najim, who is a member of the Irish Society for Clinical Nutrition and Metabolism. It's following on from that article in The Lancet, which says we need to look beyond focusing on weight loss and looking more at the overall health of the person when treating obesity. Dr. Al-Najim, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us today. It's been an interesting conversation, and hopefully you've given people some good tips, and more importantly, you've given people hope.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, earlier we did the newspaper headlines and read the headline on the front of the Irish Independent, which was about the deferral of the residential zoned land tax. And as I said, this was discussed a lot in Donegal County Council. One of those who had lots of contributions to make on the issue was Councillor Paul Canning, and he joins us now. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thank you, Paul. Paul, in terms of the RZLT, I mean, this, as far as you're concerned, is good news for everyone.
Oh, it's excellent news. And as you've stated, we as councillors, it just so happened to correspond or run hand in hand with our development plan at the time. So we were well up to speed with all of the maps, et cetera, et cetera. So we did raise concerns at that time about the agricultural farmers at that time weren't happy with the residential land zone tax. So We had got on to Minister McConlogue, and in fairness to Minister McConlogue, he told us each and every time that the farmers will not be taxed. He stated, and he was very confident at that time, but we didn't share the same confidence because we didn't see it coming through on paper to us. And he said at that time that he was working with Jack Chambers. And then when Jack Chambers did come to the county, we brought that up. And Jack Chambers sort of agreed with Minister McConnell Logan at that time that the farmers will not have to pay
it's interesting
tax if they are farming their land.
When you look at the Irish Independent this morning, the headline is interesting because the headline says new tax on land hoarders shelved ahead of budget. And that's the perception that basically this was a tax on people who are holding on to land in the hope that the value goes up before they sell it on to developers and make a quick profit. The reality in Donegal, and particularly in Inishowen, because a lot of this discussion centred around Inishowen and the outskirts of Buncrana in particular, the situation was that there was lands that the council was zoning as opportunity land, if I recall that was the phrase used, that the farmer had no intention of developing, the farmer had no intention of selling. As far as the farmers were concerned, they were working their family farms as usual, and suddenly they were being told, oh yeah, we're going to have to tax your land because it's been zoned.
Yeah, but it was the way the whole scheme was written up. The planners in this county, and it was no fault of theirs, they had to put all land in that was in scope. Now, in scope was land that were close to, we'll say, town centres, for a better word. So they had to put all that land in scope. They couldn't make a decision of who owned what. Now, at that point in time then, a lot of the land, and one of the towns in particular was Cairndona, where there is a lot of farmers that had their land within the town boundary, and they were very concerned. But listen, we had brought that up and spoke about it. But again, you know, I keep reiterating this, it is the advantage of having a minister in your county was able to speak at the top table. So I think it's great news for Donegal now. In fairness to the way that thing has been written, the headline that's being written, I don't see that changing. Insofar as the contractors or the land, the people in the middle of the town that are holding the land hoarders, for a better word, that are holding the sites to get a better price, etc., they'll still be taxed. But this is purely for agricultural farmers that are that aren't going to be punished at this point in time.
A formula is going to have to be found that will actually help differentiate between the two. I mean, and that's maybe the political challenge now that faces the government, is to find that formula whereby those who are hoarding land are taxed as arguably they should be, whereas those who are not hoarding land, but those whose land has been zoned because of where they're located, because of the opportunity element to it, that those whose land is potentially could be used for development in the future but have no intention of selling it, that they're not included in this. And finding that formula, finding the way of differentiating, is going to be the big challenge now.
Yeah, I would say that formula is well on its way. I would say that is the reason why the statement hasn't been made sooner, because they have been working on that formula, you know. And in fairness to Jack Chambers, when he met us, he was very confident that they are working through it and that it will suit the farmers. So I'd be confident that even after the budget, that we will have a formula that does work. Now, I don't know if we're fortunate or unfortunate, but we don't have the big cities, so it'll not affect us to the same extent, the formula that does come down the tracks, because we do have in my opinion, a very good development plan now, and we will work through it, and it will suit everybody in the county. And those that are hoarding the sites in the middle of the bigger towns will have to pay their 3% tax, and or else sell or else develop it, because we want our towns to be developed. So this is a good news for both sides of the house.
Paul Canning, thank you very much indeed for that perception on what is a very important story. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much.
That's Councillor Paul Canning there. And that's the latest. So as we know now, that residential zoned land tax has now been deferred. That deferral will last for a year after the budget. And after that, then we'll see what that formula will be. But good news, it would appear, for farmers and those who feared that they might be facing substantial taxes. 3% on the value of the land will be the annual tax there. Now, we've had a communication from the Blood Transfusion Service, and they are saying that obviously, as is very often the case, they have pressure on supplies. It's difficult to get donors to book appointments sometimes. They have clinics in Donegal. They're running today in Dunloe at the Oakbrook Ballroom in the Waterfront Hotel. That's running from 4:30 this afternoon until 8:50 this evening. That's blood donations being accepted in Dunloe today, August 20th. in the Waterfront Hotel from 4:30 until 10 to 9 this evening. They're in Jackson's Hotel, Bala Buffet, tomorrow, Wednesday the 21st, and again on Thursday the 22nd. Jackson's tomorrow from 3 until 5:10 in the afternoon, and then from 7 until 9:40 to 10 in the evening. That's tomorrow, Wednesday. And then on Thursday the 22nd, again, they're in Bala Buffet in Jackson's Hotel from 12 noon until 2, and then from 4 until 7:40 to 8 in the evening. 12 noon until 2, and then from 4 until 7:40 to 8 in the evening. And the Blood Transfusion Service say that any support people can give would be very much appreciated, because obviously they have to try and make sure that they can keep up their supplies. And as always, they are under pressure. Carter says, does anyone know if there has been a change in the Catholic Church on the blessing of the graves, as there's been a huge change in our parish? For the first year ever, the priest didn't come out. We had to bless the graves ourselves. The priest stayed in the church. Has this happened anywhere else? Now, unless the blessing was administered from the church and people just stood at their individual gravesite, perhaps, I don't know why that may have been. But I mean, it's a very important, the blessing of the graves on Cemetery Sunday is a very important thing for parishes right across the country. I can't answer the question with regards to any specific parish, obviously, but certainly it's an issue, I'm sure, that has been taking place. But if the blessing was conducted within the church and then people stood at their own individual graves, that blessing is still very much a valid blessing, and the blessing of the graves in the cemetery still a very important part of our culture. And it's good to see it happening, and it's also very good for parishes and for people that they know that's taking place. I want to remind you before we go to a break and the news that Irish Music Month is back once again this September, and our search for a new local hero is now very much ongoing here on Highland Radio. We're looking for the next local hero. It can be a solo artist, it can be a band, it can be anyone. Basically what we need is an original song, and that song to be recorded and sent to us before Friday coming. That's Friday, August 23rd. You can email the song to localhero@highlandradio.com along with a short written piece about you and your contact details. Highland Radio will then drop a short list of four of the performers to perform live on the 9th of Noon Show with Greg. Each of the finalists will receive €875. Highland Radio will then choose a local winner that will go forward for national consideration. And you can get more details on highlandradio.com or check our socials.